We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey Chargers fans, this is the Guilty as Charged podcast where we discuss all things related to the Los Angeles Chargers. We are available on all podcast platforms including Apple, Spotify, and Google. If you like the show, please leave us a rating or review. We do really appreciate the positive feedback. Make sure and follow us on social media, including our Patreon account, where as little as $1 gains you access to cool things like jersey giveaways and film breakdowns. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show. Hey guys, welcome into another episode of the Guilty as Charged podcast. We are so happy to be here on what is essentially a special edition of the podcast. Since the Chargers are on Monday Night Football, obviously everything got pushed back a day. And so we decided to give an extra episode for you guys. My name is Steven. I'm the host. Joining me as always are Alex and Tyler. Tyler, how you doing, man?
I'm doing a lot better than Dak Prescott's ankle. How are you?
Oh, so bad. So bad. Obviously, thoughts and prayers out to him, man. That was brutal to watch. Hopefully, he is able to bounce back from this. Alex, how are you doing today?
Personally, man? I'm doing better than Yankees fans, and that's all I can say.
Better than Yankees fans, yeah. So, baseball is a thing, okay. I guess.
Well.
Before we do start, though, I do want to say about quarterbacks, man, and, you know, I know this is a Chargers podcast, but, you know, it was so nice to see Alex Smith back out on the football field. Obviously, I'm a little biased towards him as a Utah alumni. You know, he was the reason that I really, like, fell in love with University of Utah football. And so I've always had, you know, a nice, you know, affiliation with Alex Smith, and I've always rooted for him, even when he was on the Chiefs, as much as that might pain some Chargers fans to hear. So seeing him just bounce back from this injury, and, you know, I hope that Dak Prescott can have some similar circumstances, but, you know, just seeing him bounce back and finish, and then Kyle Allen was cleared medically and they decided to keep Alex Smith in. So obviously very happy for Alex, and hopefully, like I said, Dak can have some similar circumstances for him as well.
Yeah, I really needed him to go in there because the Rams defense got me 8 sacks. So it worked out. He got his moment and I got my fantasy points.
There you go.
It's
all of the fantasy points.
The Washington QB situation is interesting because there were some rumors that they might trade Haskins prior to the trade deadline. So that's kind of interesting given that he wasn't picked by this regime, and maybe some team picks him up and tries to develop him. I don't know.
So, yeah, obviously, you know, the Dak Prescott stuff sucks, and happy to see Alex Smith back, but It was a crazy day for Chargers news, man. I was flying back from St. Louis. I was, gone for the weekend to see my brother-in-law's wedding. And I get all these notifications once we land in Phoenix. And, you know, Adam Schefter is saying that the Chargers have been impacted by COVID, obviously, even though they have no positive cases just because of the Broncos and Patriots game. And so this schedule has been changed massively. This was not just a simple swap like I kind of thought it would be, you know, just swapping the Jaguars and the Broncos game. So the Chargers do have a bye next week, and then they'll play the Jaguars in week 7, Broncos in week 8, Raiders in week 9, Dolphins in week 10, and then the Jets in week 11. So, the Chargers had a week 10 bye. That is obviously now in week 6, and then they'll play 11 games in a row. Tyler and I kind of feel the same way about this, that maybe having the bye next week is obviously a blessing in disguise. Alex maybe didn't share those same sentiments. Alex, what are your thoughts on the Chargers getting their schedule moved around, and does this help or hurt them?
I didn't love it because having the week 11 and having the week 11 bye originally, and instead of going 11 straight weeks, I just thought that was a lot better than what they were what they're going to have to do now. And the Jets game after the Saints game, I think, served as kind of a bye in itself. So it's like, okay, even if they lose to the Saints, right, you can bounce back, probably rest Bosa, probably rest Ingram and other guys, and you can still get the win versus the Jets. So I don't like the bye, and then, you know, they have Miami, which is a trap game. I think then Jacksonville is after that. No, it's Denver after that, right? I don't know what the order of the schedule is really anymore. But I think it's Miami, then Denver, and they switch Jacksonville later. But I just don't like it because now they have to go 11 straight weeks. And I just like the week. I like having the late bye better. And Anthony Lynn at the same time kind of builds his team around that, right? Not building the team, but coaches do plan for when they have their bye. So I don't like that's being all thrown around. It's like, okay, well, you have your bye next week, and then you got to play 11 straight weeks. So I just didn't like it from a coaching perspective, and also, an injury down the stretch perspective when they weren't expecting to play like this.
Yeah, and that's totally fair. And just to reiterate, it's bye, and then Jaguars, Broncos, Raiders, Dolphins, Jets. Tyler, I know me and you kind of had this conversation just via Twitter. You know, obviously playing 11 games in a row hurts, but the Chargers have so many guys that are injured that, you know, short term, you know, this might suck for the Chargers, but long term, I think having a bye next week ultimately benefits them. What are your thoughts on this situation?
Yeah, I agree. There's no like obvious 100% win here, but I do think that, listen, if you're going to even hope to make the playoffs, you got to get healthy early. And, you know, the Broncos truly are almost as difficult for the Chargers to beat as the Chiefs. And who knows? I mean, maybe it really would take more players to beat the Broncos, despite the fact that they've lost so many players. You know, maybe they do need some of these guys back just to make sure that's a win. What I'm hoping for is, because the schedule has been so whack, and because every fan's going, stop the games for a week. I'm hoping maybe, I don't know if the NFL is smart enough, that they'll give another bye week later on. So the Chargers get an early bye. And then for some reason, because everything is really starting to kind of suck right now. I mean, the Chargers, just the schedule's all changed. I mean, that's just one team. Who knows what the Titans and the Patriots and the Broncos, all these teams, it's ridiculous. And so if they do take a late season, you know, bye, almost like an all-star break kind of deal, you technically might get two byes in here. So I'd be curious to see how that goes. Look, the Chargers have no cases right now. They might get a bye just because the other team has COVID issues or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I wish that the bye, it's tough. Both are good byes for different reasons. But right now, given the current state of the team, I think it's just necessary. And, you know, they have to win these games. I personally don't think the Chargers will beat the Saints tonight, if you're listening on Monday. So, you know, 1-4, you got to win these games. And they're going to need everyone, clearly. So, I guess the bye coming right now is a blessing in disguise, I suppose, for now.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, a kind of a double-edged sword, because, you know, if you lose against the Saints, you know, you can kind of recoup. But then again, if you win against the Saints, then your momentum's kind of stopped. Whereas, you know, with the previous schedule, you beat the Saints and then you have the Jets and then you have all these winnable games, right? So you can get some momentum going. So there's definitely a case to be made for, you know, both arguments. I think in general, you know, you mentioned the extra bye. The NFL took a ton of shit for how they did not plan for the coronavirus and specifically like training camp. And now it's going to happen again because you look at, you know, what college football was able to do. The ACC gave every single team two byes. You know, the SEC has two byes as well. So the NFL kind of just saying, you know what, we're just going to stick to our guns and have the 16-game schedule and then we'll just figure it out down the road is honestly, it was really irresponsible. And they should have made better plans for this. Now, Adam Schefter said that after next week, there's going to be like 18 teams that have had byes already. And that's just, it's just asking for more cancellations. You know, we saw in baseball, you know, the Marlins and the Cardinals had a bunch of cases and then they were able to kind of figure it out. But, you know, you don't have the same kind of flexibility with the NFL and with football. And so I think the NFL has handled this about as bad as possible. And if anyone thinks that this is just going to be the Titans that are going to have an outbreak, you're mistaken. Like, this is not going to be just a Titans issue. This is going to happen again with another team. And, you know, we've seen with the Patriots, all it takes is two or three cases and you have to reschedule a game and then it affects four other teams. So the NFL has really messed up on this. And, you know, I wish that, yeah, I'm not saying that they should put a whole pause on the season, but I think they need to add a week 18, like Tyler mentioned, add another bye week for everybody, you know, have some more flexibility in terms of scheduling and, you know, just have a better plan for this than what they have shown to this point.
For me, one of the things that is kind of noticeable about the Chargers schedule is we talked about like maybe them having an extra bye down the road or some other team having a bye down the road. Like the Titans-Bills game is scheduled for Tuesday still. And I don't expect that to hold at the current moment. But, you know, so the Chargers play the Bills later on in the season. So it's like, okay, well, if that gets pushed, does the Chargers game against the Bills get pushed somehow? Because of reconfiguring the schedule and all that. So that was just my thing in terms of looking at it from that angle. My suggestion for the last couple weeks regarding making the schedule has been, why don't they just push the Super Bowl for like a month or push the playoffs for like a month? And then after that, you know, you can kind of just make a schedule or you have basically 4 weeks in which you can insert games. And I mean, it's sort of the same thing college football does, which is like they have a month between when the season ends and when bowl games start, or like the season ends and the college football playoff starts. So I just think they should really like just have a month at the end of the season where you can reschedule and plug these games in. And I think that would make sense for the long run.
Yeah, and ultimately the NFL just is going to have to show more creativity. And you can't just keep saying, oh, we're just going to keep canceling and pushing these games back and then altering schedules like this. Like, this is not a sustainable plan. I don't even think it's a plan. I think the NFL is just kind of winging it. And, you know, they got to figure it out right now. Mm-hmm. So in terms of good news for the Chargers, Michael Thomas is not playing tomorrow. This is not injury related. Turns out he got in a fight with Gardner Johnson, the corner from Florida, and actually punched him in practice. So Michael Thomas is essentially being suspended for tomorrow's game. This matchup on paper for the Chargers defense is tough, but not having Michael Thomas out there makes it certainly a little easier for the Chargers defense tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, you said it right there. Nothing much more to say. I mean, not having Mike Thomas, you watch the Saints play the Raiders, and they just didn't look very good. If you can stop Kamara, you know, Breeze isn't chucking deep balls to Sanders, and I hope Traquan Smith goes off. He's on my fantasy team, but otherwise, like, it's just, I mean, it helps a lot. I mean, you one of the best receivers in the NFL is not playing, so there's nothing more to say, really. It's just helpful.
Right. I think the big thing with Michael Thomas from a matchup standpoint is Casey Hayward hasn't been playing that great this season. So him having to go against Emmanuel Sanders or Traquan Smith is huge instead of going against Michael Thomas. And then that kind of, you know, goes down the pole to Mike Davis as well as Desmond King. Right. So now instead of one of them covering Sanders or Traquan Smith. Right. Because Hayward would be theoretically covering Michael Thomas. Now their matchups get a little bit easier, right? So I think just the cumulative effect on the secondary is it's just kind of like a load being taken off.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that is for sure spot on. In terms of other Saints injuries, Jared Cook is questionable. That would obviously help a little bit more as well. It seems like he's going to play, though. He's been a limited participant all week. Marcus Davenport, the edge rusher opposite of Cameron Jordan, looks like he's going to make his debut as well. He is questionable, but he's been limited all week as well. Ryan Ramczyk, their amazing right tackle, seems to have cleared concussion protocol. He left last week early to that. It seems like he is going to play as well. In terms of Saints players who are out, obviously there's Michael Thomas, and then Janoris Jenkins, their cornerback number two, is out. He obviously starts opposite Marcus Lattimore. Marcus Lattimore is questionable, so we'll have to see what he does. Again, limited all week. But that's pretty much it in terms of Saints injuries. I guess Janoris Jenkins not playing is kind of helpful. I've never been like super worried about him, but I mean, it's something, I guess.
Eh, it's just a participation trophy consolation prize at this point. They're so healthy at most of their important positions, and the Chargers aren't. So,
yeah, I mean,
I guess
go ahead, Alex, not having to play Janoris Jenkins is okay, but it's not like they don't have corners, right? And also they added Malcolm Jenkins this season, which I'm still mad about. It is what it is, but. I guess not having to go against him would be better, but I don't really think it's a big difference to the secondary, unlike, say, what the Chiefs are, without some of their best corners with suspensions and stuff.
Yeah, that is a good point. And, if Marcus Lattimore plays, the Saints defense doesn't really have any excuses. In terms of the Chargers, it is very unfortunate, but in terms of players who could benefit from having a bye week next week, Brian Bulaga and Trey Turner are at the top of that list. They are both out this week. Trey Turner is particularly confusing because Coach Lynn said that he was going to play against the Panthers. Like, he flat out said he expects him to play. And then in his press conference on Saturday, he said that his injury was a little more severe than they thought originally. So the bye week definitely will help him and Bulaga as well. I'm not super surprised that Bulaga is not playing. An offensive lineman having a back injury, that's not playing. Anytime you see an offensive lineman with a back injury, he's not playing for a couple weeks. This is kind of maybe off topic, but I guess a lot of people were asking me, and so I'm going to ask you guys, do you feel like the Chargers made a mistake signing Brian Bulaga and trading for Trey Turner, considering they are not healthy at all?
No, I mean, how are you supposed to know that? I mean, I understand that there were injury concerns with both. But your reaction to the signing is when you're signing it, and your decision based on, what you should do is how they are in that moment. And in that moment, that move, both those moves were universally praised. And right. I think you have to, in hindsight, what else are you going to do at this point? Like, draft a guard? Like, who are they going to draft in the fifth round or something at this point? If they got Herbert, Murray, traded the third and got Kelly, is your fifth round right guard going to be any better? Maybe, I suppose. Like, and maybe drafting depth would have been better. But no, I don't think it's a mistake. And they could very well come back after the bye and play well like we expect them to.
Right. I think that's spot on. And the thing about their deals is, like, even if it doesn't work out, and let's say, they do miss a lot of games, they're pretty easy contracts to get out of if the Chargers have to. Trey Turner's only on a 2-year deal. Blog is on a 3-year deal. I'm not sure exactly how much guaranteed money he has. But it's not like they gave these guys 4 or 5-year deals, right, where it's just like it's impossible to get out of if something does go wrong. The thing that concerns me about them is just that it keeps kind of, not the Bulaga one because he kind of re-aggravated, but the Turner one has kind of kept going for a couple weeks now, and I'm starting to get some Mike Pouncey vibes where it's like you don't hear anything, and then bam, he's out for the season. So I'm starting to get some of those vibes from that situation, but hopefully he's able to come back after the bye and just regroup.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope it's not some Mike Pouncey situation. That would not be fun. So the right guard situation, you know, I've said this on Twitter, I don't love it. Tyrese St. Louis at least offers a nice presence, a nice physical presence in the run game. Like, he really made some plays in week one in the run game. So I would rather see Tyrese St. Louis out there. Apparently he's going to be the swing guy in terms of guards. Ryan Groy is going to be starting, which I hate. I don't like it at all. Groy was unanimously our lowest graded player on our quarterly grades. So, you know, I'll get to the offensive line later, but not too excited about seeing Ryan Groy. And then the big ones, obviously, are Mike Williams and Joey Bosa. Jeff Miller kind of floated the idea that maybe with a bye next week that the Chargers might hold both of them out. It was obviously speculation. He was not reporting anything, at least to our knowledge. But I think Mike Williams is going to play. Joey is concerning because he popped up today with an ankle injury again. So he's got the tricep, an ankle, and a knee injury. Alex, what do you make of, you know, the ramifications of potentially not having Bosa tomorrow? And should he play? Should he sit? Where do you land with the Joey Bosa injury?
I mean, the ramifications of not having Bosa are huge, because not just because of Bosa, but you don't have Ingram either tomorrow, right? So do you want starting right ends Isaac Rochelle and, I said Isaac Rochelle, so that was enough, really, to drive home the point, but it would be Isaac Rochelle, Isaac Rochelle and Wosu, and that would, you know, and then maybe they put Tillery at defensive end, like you guys have been mentioning on Twitter. I don't know if that would be a thing that they consider for this game. But not having Bosa would just be massive, especially when you have Breeze, which is like, that's a quarterback, you know, like Brady last week, where they didn't really get pressure. You know, if you don't put pressure on him, he can tear you up. So, you know, you got to get hits, you got to get sacks on him. So not having Bosa would be huge in that regard. I think Mike Williams will try to play. I think both will try to play as much as they can. I think Williams being a limited participant is good instead of being held out. So I think Williams will probably play in the same way he did against, I think he was also limited all week when he, against the Panthers, and he still played, but then he came out that game, obviously. But I mean, he's a tough guy, so I think he'll try to go. I think Bosa will try to go. I think it might be more likely that they hold Bosa out just because, you know, they really can't risk him having a serious, serious injury.
Yeah, I'm much more confident in Mike Williams playing right now, just because of his personal history. And like you mentioned, you know, we've seen this season how he's kind of defied the odds, so to speak, to come back. But, you know, if the Chargers do play Joey Bosa and he, you know, kind of worsens these injuries and then he has to miss in an extended amount of time, that would be the worst possible scenario, because then you're without Ingram, Bosa, Austin Eckler, Derwin James, Drew Drink, all these guys, right? And Joey Bosa and Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler have, and Justin Herbert obviously, have been able to kind of hold the glue together right now. But if you lose Bosa, I'm not confident in Isaac Rochelle's ability to be a starter at all. And then, you know, today, Jesse Lemonnier popped up on the injury report as well. So they could potentially be calling up Joe Gaziano to make his debut. I don't really know. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see about that tomorrow. Yeah, I mentioned this on Twitter, and you kind of highlighted this a little bit before, Alex. If Joey can't play, Jerry Tillery needs to start a defensive end. And then you start Damian Square, defensive tackle. You know, Cortez Broughton, or Brufton, or however you say it, can play, you know, in Damian Square's role. But, you know, the idea of of seeing Isaac Rochelle out there for 60 snaps, man, and then Joe Gaziano being his backup, it just... I wanted this team to draft an edge rusher late, at least, you know, have some kind of depth behind these two. But, you know, if Jerry Tillery is not playing defensive end, this is going to be a long, long game. The Saints offensive tackles are arguably the best two, the best combination in the league. They have combined to give up one sack this year, just one, and only seven pressures between the two of them. So not having Bosa would obviously be, you know, a huge, huge loss for the Chargers tomorrow night.
Yeah, Isaac Rochelle has been a total non-factor since we were worried about him last year And then we're worried about again this year, and just still continues to be a non-factor, at least on defense. On special teams, I know he has a role, he's a leader, but that doesn't sack Drew Brees. So unfortunately, we're kind of stuck with... listen, like, you guys are talking about, I think Williams and Bosa will both play. They're two guys that I don't really see as guys that'll just kind of take the week off kind of guys. You know, I know Williams pushes, yeah. Bosa definitely pushes. But again, if Bosa... It's hard to say because this whole questionable thing, you know, we don't have probable anymore. I mean, for all we know, Joey Bosa could technically just be probable with like a little knee tweak and a little ankle tweak. It's not the case, yeah. But we don't quite know what questionable means. I'm glad it's not doubtful at least. So it's not like he's limping onto the field every play. But the Chargers, yeah, they're in a tough spot for sure. I do think they do have plans. I know it's just a practice squad move, but I do think they do have plans to move Tillery outside and swap with Bosa occasionally because they signed that guy to their practice squad. So maybe they elevate another guy and let, you know, Tillery go to the outside. Square plays on the inside. Who knows? So, yeah, hopefully they don't lose him. And then Denzel Perryman, just a minor wrist injury. Seems like he's a full go.
Right, good call.
But still, hopefully he's okay because he's been one of the few playmakers on defense so far.
Yeah, shockingly, he's been... According to PFF, the best linebacker on the team. So Denzel has certainly played well. I do want to mention, I saw some people last week saying that the team should have moved Joey around a little bit more. You know, Daniel Popper pointed this out. It is his right tricep that has been bothering him. And so it's much easier to kind of use your outside hand as a pass rusher to, you know, do all your pass rush moves. And so if he plays, he will be exclusively going against Ryan Ramczyk. Which, you know, I'm excited to watch. Obviously, I would have loved to see them both healthy, but do not expect Joey to be moving around all that much. Last week, it was Uchenna Nwosu who was going over the guards and kind of searching out some mismatches. But, you know, it's going to be tough without Joey Bosa. So that'll do it for our injury report recap. I should have mentioned this earlier, but we did have a big interview with the Draft Network's head draft analyst, Jordan Reed. He was able to join me earlier this week, and I was able to interview and ask him some good questions about Justin Herbert. What should the Chargers do in the draft next year? Yes, I know it's early, but you know, I love the draft so much. And so getting to interview Jordan Reed about this was a lot of fun. So take a listen. All right, guys. So happy now to be joined by Jordan Reed, very popular Twitter follow, obviously, because of his work for the Draft Network as the senior NFL draft analyst. Jordan, how you doing, man?
Good. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. I'm so happy to be here with you to talk some quarterbacks. Obviously, yourself as a former Division I quarterback, you know, one of the best guys to go to in terms of quarterback. And yesterday we had some big news from the Chargers head coaching staff. And, you know, Justin Herbert has been elevated to the starting quarterback going forward. I want to revisit, though, quickly. What did you see out of Justin Herbert out of college? What did you like? What were some kind of areas of concern? And maybe what have you seen from his three NFL starts that has kind of you know, influenced your opinion of him now?
Yeah, well, Justin was a really interesting case just because he was an early starter at Oregon. And it's something that you rarely see, especially at such a prominent program. But I loved a lot of things that I saw from him. Of course, he has the prototypical size that you're looking for. I think that's one of the biggest areas that a lot of people really had a lot of interest in him. And size has kind of been something that's been not as much important as we've seen in previous years, just because, you know, guys like Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson have kind of debunked that a little bit as far as just looking at the size, but it's just evaluating the prospect as a whole. Justin Herbert, he had fantastic arm strength. That's one of the biggest things that stands out about him. And you guys have seen it early on in his career. He had a gorgeous throw a couple weeks ago down the middle of the field that was about like 60 or 65 yards that was on the dime. So he has the arm strength that you're looking for. But I think the smarts is the biggest thing that you love about him. He has a very high football IQ. And just watching him live down at the Senior Bowl, that really was my first time really seeing him throw in person. You saw some of the leadership qualities that a lot of people had a lot of questions about him. He kind of has that reserved, laid-back personality, but he's more of a lead-by-example type of guy, and that's okay. I think he was kind of unfairly knocked for that a lot during his pre-draft process. Yeah. And that was one of the biggest things that a lot of people had questions about him, was if you place him in an NFL locker room, could he really be a leader? And he's done that so far. And I think the guys have really done a good job of really galvanizing towards his personality. And of course, if he goes out there and proves that he can be the guy, which he has done to this point, in my opinion, I think that's something that's only going to get better for him going forward. But I think the biggest thing that has been a big surprise about Herbert that I think a lot of people really didn't notice on his college film just because he was kind of mismanaged at Oregon. And what I mean by mismanaged is that he just wasn't in a system that enabled him to show off how good of a player he right. was, just because the system at Oregon is very east-west oriented. There's a lot of quick throws, a lot of perimeter screens to the perimeter, and a lot of quick throws on the outside. But I always said if he was placed in a situation with a vertical offense, you're really going to see just how good he can be. And I think he's benefited from that early on.
He has, and I think that's spot on. And, you know, he really has a nice relationship budding with Keenan Allen. And, you know, that touchdown pass a couple weeks ago to him, you know, was a good thing to see. I've been most impressed, though, with his ability to handle pressure. Was that maybe a concern that you had of him coming out of Oregon? And what have you seen from him now that maybe is different?
It wasn't a huge concern just because he's proven to be a very athletic guy. And if you go back and watch the last game of his career in the bowl game, he showed just how good his wheels can be, especially in the open field. He's a guy that does a really good job of eluding pressure. So the athleticism standpoint really wasn't something that really worried me a whole bunch with him. I think it was just a situation of where not really knowing where to go as far as his hot reads, just because the offense was so quick passing game oriented. He had some struggles with knowing where to go with his hot reads and just how to get out of blitzes. So it wasn't a huge concern with me. It just was a matter of knowing exactly where to go with the ball. But I always say with these young quarterbacks, they have to have athleticism entering the league, just because you know the charge, the offensive line situation isn't great. So he has to be able to overcompensate or overcome that with his athleticism, being able to use his legs, being able to extend plays outside of the pocket, which he has done a good job of so far.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. You mentioned the offensive line, and we'll get to them later. I want to talk about this decision, though, because, you know, Anthony Lynn, as the Chargers head coach, had said after the week two game against the Kansas City Chiefs that if Tyrod Taylor was healthy, he was going to be the starting quarterback. And then obviously that has changed. What do you think of that situation and the way that the Chargers handled it? And do you think that if they had really gone back to Tyrod Taylor, do you think that would have affected Justin Herbert's psyche in a negative way?
I don't think it would have affected him much, just because he understands the situation that he walked into with Tyrod being the bridge. And this isn't a foreign situation to Tyrod as well. I mean, he did it in, I believe it was in Buffalo, where he was the guy ahead of Josh Allen before he eventually took over that spot there. So Tyrod understands exactly what type of situation that he was walking through the door with the Chargers when they ended up selecting Herbert after signing him. So he knows what's going on, but there's kind of like this unspoken rule in football of where you don't lose your spot to injury. And I think that's kind of what Anthony Lynn was going by with this decision, just because everybody knows that Justin Herbert he's going to have the keys of the future of the franchise turned over to him eventually. And Lynn was kind of abiding by that rule a little bit more than what you would like, but it was just a situation of where Herbert was making so many plays. Like, a lot of people were going to run him out of the city if he didn't play him the next week, just because he's already the future of the franchise. And like with these young franchise quarterbacks, it's kind of like, you just want to see more from them, especially when they're making so many flash plays. And it would have been a stopgap from that more if he would have put Tyrod back out there. And we know that Herbert has much more upside than what Tyrod has shown to this point in his career.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's spot on. And, you know, this isn't related to the Chargers, obviously, but I would love to get your thoughts on what is happening in Washington with Dwayne Haskins. And I know that it hasn't been a good situation for him. He's had some good games, some bad games. But it just seemed like from the outside looking in, I'm not a quarterback expert. It just seemed like they didn't really give him a fair chance. What did you make of the whole situation and benching him for Kyle Allen?
Yeah, so I haven't actually been able to speak on this publicly, and I kind of was selective with my tweets about it as well, just before I got the proper information about it. So with Haskins, I just think it was a situation of where he wasn't really Ron Rivera's guy, and he knew that he was going to give this guy a chance, but it was just a situation of where he wasn't his guy. And I think that was one of the biggest reasons why they traded for Kyle Allen, just so they could have that security blanket behind him. And we know that Washington has always been a debacle with their quarterback situations. There's only Dan Snyder that's on that team, from RG3 to Kirk Cousins to some of these other guys that they have had in the center that have shown some promise. So Haskins is just the latest guy along those lines. But Haskins, he just hasn't been very good this year, but I think you have to kind of give him a mulligan with that, just because outside of Terry McLaurin, he really doesn't have much to work with there. So he just doesn't have a bunch of weapons to help him out, especially being a young quarterback. I think that's one of the biggest reasons between him and Herbert right now, as far as Herbert has Mike Williams, he has Keenan Allen, he has Hunter Henry, he has all these weapons to his disposal, and outside of Terry McLaurin, Haskins just doesn't have that.
Yeah, that is true. You know, it's just, you know, a product of the environment sometimes, and unfortunately, Dwayne just has not gotten a fair shakeout. In terms of this year, obviously the coronavirus has, you know, run rampant through college football and the NFL. There's been, you know, a bunch of notable college football players that have decided to opt out, including Penei Sewell, Gregory Rousseau from Miami. How does them opting out impact you guys? Because, you know, obviously you still have to evaluate them. Penei Sewell is arguably a top five pick in terms of talent. Is there concern with these guys who are opting out that, you know, maybe, you know, we haven't seen them in a while? Like, where do you guys land on players who are opting out right now?
I think it's just a situation of a case-by-case basis, honestly. With Gregory Rousseau, obviously, he's going to be a little bit different from Michael Parsons just because the sample size is a little bit different. Parsons has played 2 years as opposed to Rousseau. Rousseau has only played one. I don't really count his freshman year just because he only played three games with the ankle injury prior to being sidelined to that. So you really have to evaluate the sample size. But some guys, I mean, you've seen enough. Like, I didn't need to see another year of Michael Parsons. I already know what he is. But with Rousseau, it's a little bit different just because he's a guy that really isn't the sum of his parts right now. And we don't know if that production really was fool's gold in a sense. And what I mean by fool's gold is he goes out, he has a really big year his first year, and then he comes out and he kind of regresses back to the mean a little bit during that second year. So the sample size is, I think it's decent with Rousseau, but whenever a guy is, you know, 6'6", 260 pounds, and he put up 19 tackles for loss and then 15 and a half sacks, of course he's going to be drafted high just because of the intrigue with them. So the sample size is something that you always worry about, but there's just some guys that you've seen enough.
Yeah, that totally makes sense, especially about Parsons, and I would put Penei Sewell in that category as well. So I wanted you to put your Tom Telesco hat on here. You know, you obviously have your franchise quarterback. You know, the Chargers offensive line has been an issue, really, you know, arguably since Nick Hardwick retired in 2012. Mike Williams is possibly moving on in a year or two, and maybe Hunter Henry as well. So if you're Tom Telesco and you're staring, like, let's say in the 10 to 15 range, are you drafting an offensive lineman? Are you drafting, you know, a guy like Jalen Waddle, Jamar Chase? What would you do in that situation, if knowing that you have Justin Herbert and your franchise quarterback?
So I think Telesco is in a really interesting spot, and I think this defense is fully loaded, but I think edge rusher might be another circumstance that they might face themselves with just because I'm not sure if they're going to be able to pay Bosa and Ingram. I just don't see that being able to happen just because both of those guys are at the top of their positions right now. But just staying on subject with the offensive side of the ball, I put a receiver in that spot. I had him going Devonta Smith in my latest mock draft. I think that would be a really good spot for him as well. So I think it comes down to receiver or offensive tackle, but I think offensive tackle really would be more prevalent just because the Chargers have suffered so many injuries, man. I just don't know what's going on there. The luck has just been terrible from, you know, Pouncey to a Forrest Lamp. Fortunately, he's been pretty good this year for the most part from just the outside looking in. But prior to this year, he's just been so – the injury bug has really struck him so bad. So I think there's a situation. I would love for them to get a left tackle like a Samuel Cosmi from Texas. I think that's a guy I think – will be a really good fit, depending on where they're picking. I don't think they're going to be in contention for Penei Sewell because I think he's going to be a top five pick. I don't really see the Chargers really earning a spot that high. I think they're going to end up probably a top 15 to 20. I think that's fair to say for the Chargers, but I just don't see them being in contention for Penei Sewell. But Samuel Cosmi is one that I absolutely love for them. There's an FCS prospect that's probably going to rise here over the next couple months or so, Dylan Raddatz from North Dakota State, who I think is going to be commonly pegged to the Chargers, depending on where they're selecting. So Cosmi and Raddatz are definitely two guys that I would love to see Tom Telesco take a chance on.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of Samuel Cosmi as well. You know, Alex Leatherwood has been a guy that's connected – well, not connected, but obviously mocked draft a few times to the Chargers as well. In terms of this, just in general, you know, the receiver class last year was – and we'll get you out of here on this one, but – the receiving class last year was so good. It was so deep. You know, maybe the Chargers go down that avenue this year. Maybe they don't. You know, sitting here in October, what are your overall thoughts on the receiving class for 2021?
It's crazy to say, but I think it might be even better than last year. And we saw guys like Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, and even Justin Jefferson making a huge impact already. And I wouldn't even go as far to say I think there's more depth in this class as well. Now, there might not be superstar talent at the top last year's class, because we knew the top three guys were Ruggs, Judy, and Lamb. But I think Justin Jefferson should have formally been in that conversation. We see how big of an impact he's made with the Vikings. But
yeah,
with the Alabama guys, we're talking about, Jalen Waddle, who I think is a superstar. Devonta Smith, who is a superstar. And there's plenty of other receivers around the country as well that are playing really good right now that I think could go on to have really good careers. So even if Telesco doesn't want to take one early, he's going to have his pick of the litter after that.
Well, that is good to hear, and we'll look forward to seeing how that pans out. And Jordan, thank you so much for joining us. Can't wait to continue to read all your mock drafts and everything like that. I'm a sucker for mock drafts. So thanks again for your time, and we look forward to seeing the rest of your work the rest of the way.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure.
So hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview with Jordan Reed. You know, I think he's super knowledgeable. He was obviously a former college quarterback, and, you know, it was fun picking his brain. And just kind of highlighting what, you know, the three of us feel, right? That Justin Herbert has made so much progress as a starter. And, you know, Tyler didn't get the chance to kind of talk about him being named the starter. Tyler was obviously, you know, kind of the captain of the Tyrod Taylor ship. What did you think about Justin Herbert officially being named the starter and the progress that he has made from what we all watched at Oregon?
As far as him being named the starter, it was the right move. I'm thankful that they did. I like Tyrod Taylor. Obviously, I like Tyrod Taylor. I wanted him to start. But at this point, you know, how nice is it kind of that the Chargers get to start Herbert and then they get a whole bye week to go with Herbert to help learn this offense so much more? It's not even the same quarterback or the same system. Like, everyone's like, you know, thinking, oh, I know you didn't like Herbert. People are calling people out for not liking Herbert. You didn't get to see really any of this. And it's a credit to the coaching staff right, for not only developing him so quickly and getting him up to speed so quickly and having the offense take the next step every week, but also letting him push the ball down the field. Like, I'm almost shocked. Like, you're supposed to do that with Herbert. He's got the arm. You can do that. I'm just surprised that he's chucking the ball down deep to, you know, two undrafted free agents and a XFL tight end, you know, and they're giving him the opportunities to make these big time throws and these big time decisions. And it's been really impressive. So huge credit to him. I had him as a late first round grade. Obviously we all knew they would go earlier because that's just the nature of the quarterback position. So far the class looks pretty good except for Tua, because Fitzpatrick just continues to be excellent apparently. But Herbert overall, I'm impressed, and I can't believe that the Chargers, you know, if they drafted, not technically didn't draft Rivers, but, you know, they had Rivers in 2004, they had Breeze before that, and they might just go to Herbert for the next 15 years, which means, you know, we could be 2035. We're talking about the next time the Chargers could draft a quarterback, which means we've gone 30 years with good quarterback, solid, consistent quarterback play, which is amazing. So the fact that in three games, I know it's early. Yeah. But you can just kind of see it. And he's set up on a team where he's set up for success. There's a lot of talent on this team. Despite the offensive line being hurt, when everybody gets healthy, it's actually a pretty decent offensive line. You know, he's set up for success. I think he's going to be the offensive rookie of the year, because if he continues to play the rest of the games and not get hurt, because Burrow didn't look all that good and he's not on a winning team. So if Herbert can go on Monday Night Football and win in New Orleans, even if it's not completely his, you know, because of him, front runner for offensive rookie of the year. I know CeeDee Lamb's got a lot of attention, but Herbert's the quarterback, the number 6 overall pick. So, I mean, and I just got to add that the fact that Murray is also a guy who, you know, I think Daniel Jeremiah had him in the top 20 of rookies. So the fact that Telesco hit 2 home runs potentially with his first 2 first round picks, or his only 2 first round picks, pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. And, you know, you talk about the rookie of the year thing, which obviously you talk about throughout the season, but I feel like Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, you know, at worst are going to put up similar stats, right? And you know, we've kind of seen that throughout the season so far. But, you know, if Justin Herbert can win, you know, 7-8 games, you know, obviously that would never be a feather in his cap. I really enjoyed talking with Jordan Reed, because, you know, he highlighted really what his strengths are and what everybody kind of in the draft world could tell. And, you know, you could see the potential in terms of a vertical passing game. And we saw that come to fruition on Sunday against the Buccaneers. And he was able to connect, you know, on some beautiful, beautiful plays with Tyron Johnson, who, you know, if Mike Williams doesn't play, I'm excited to see Tyron Johnson again. I'm just going to say that right now. He was obviously elevated to the 53-man roster. So super excited for him. But Justin Herbert, man, you know, they're really kind of, it's been a slow, you know, ease into the playbook. You know, obviously under those circumstances, you can't fully unleash a quarterback into the playbook. But last week we saw 7 or 8 RPOs. You know, he threw one to Keenan Allen. He faked a pitch to Joshua Kelly and then ran one. And then obviously the deep throws, and those were, you know, I want to say like 5 or 6 calls as well. So I'm really excited to see where they go from here on out with Justin Herbert and how he's able to progress. And you know, he keeps on saying what a great opportunity, right? In Monday Night Football, you know, there's no better opportunity to have, you know, to show the world like I'm legit. I'm the Chargers franchise quarterback. I'm going to come out here and ball out. And just really excited to see how he continues to grow, and especially tomorrow night.
Did Rivers ever beat Breeze?
I think maybe like the first game when New Orleans, when the Saints were not in New Orleans, I think they played when they were playing in Oklahoma.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. They have not been the Saints. They don't play super often, right, which is why they obviously do the preseason stuff together. But it has been a while since the Chargers have beaten the Saints. Alex, what were you going
to
say?
I was just going to say, imagine going back to when we had that draft party and, you know, poor Jason. poor Jason had his hands in his face and everyone was depressed. It was like a funeral. And imagine going back to that time and saying, hey, Justin Herbert's going to have equal rookie of the year odds with Joe Burrow. It's just crazy how quickly things have changed.
Yeah, and give
things... Go ahead, Tom.
No, I was just going to say credit to coaching, because on the one hand, we're like, oh my gosh, Justin Herbert, we got Herbert. Could be mediocre, who knows, but it's all up to the coaching. And of course, because of coaching and because of who he is as a prospect, and the Chargers knew it and we didn't, he's offensive rookie of the year potential. And whereas the other guy we wanted, Isaiah Simmons, the coaching staff can't figure out how to use him. You know, and that's the other guy that we wanted. So it's just kind of been amazing. Like, even though we were all kind of down on it, it all came down to coaching and situation, and Herbert's been in the great one.
Yeah, poor Isaiah Simmons, man. He's playing 11 snaps a game down there in Arizona. It's just, you know, Alex loved Isaiah Simmons, and it's just been so sad to see them wasting his talent.
He had one bad game at linebacker in the beginning, and then they were just like, okay, well, we're just going to give him 11 snaps a game at linebacker instead of, like, trying him at safety or any of the other good things he does. And I'm just like, what the hell are you guys doing? Like, you have a generational talent. but I'm hurt.
It's confusing, and now they lost Chandler Jones today, so, you know, the injuries continue around the league, so I would love to see Isaiah Simmons get some more run out there. And you know, the Arizona defense is bad, especially without Chandler Jones now. So we'll get into our keys to the game now. We each have chosen 2 that we're going to highlight, and then we'll do predictions. So, you know, I'm really excited for this game. You know, I'm expecting this to be kind of a shootout. The over-under right now, I think, is 52 points. If you are betting on the game, I would bet on the over. I'm not a betting man, but you're just kind of seeing how this has played out. I think this is going to be an over. So we'll start with Alex, your 2 keys to the game. You know, the Chargers are going to win if they do what?
First one is holding Alvin Kamara in check. As we mentioned with the Raiders game, also, you know, in some of the other games just in the last couple of years, the Saints are a totally different team when he's held in check and not going off versus, you know, when he's going crazy. And we saw the Chargers have a lot of problems with Ronald Jones last week. Just getting big chunk plays, you know, 5-6 yards a carry, and really giving them problems. So, you know, if Alvin Kamara has that kind of week, the Chargers are really in a bad position. So if they can hold him in check, and, you know, maybe they hold him to 4 yards per carry and he doesn't get that involved in the receiving game, I can see them, you know, winning this game for sure. But, you know, it's really... without Thomas, they're going to lean heavily, I think, on Kamara. So that's one of them. The other one is putting pressure on Drew Brees. We mentioned it with Brady kind of last week, and then they didn't get any pressure on Brady. So that kind of really doomed him in that Tampa game. But, you know, Brees is affected by pressure more than a lot of other quarterbacks, specifically when it comes to sacks. So Breeze's completion percentage is actually 1% lower in games when he gets sacks versus the average for a quarterback is 0.5% lower when they take a sack. So, you know, if you get sacks and you get pressure on Breeze, it could affect, you know, 2 or 3, you know, throws a game. And that's big when talking about throws in the fourth quarter or throws in the red zone, right? So I think getting pressure on Breeze and getting sacks specifically, which this defense has had trouble doing the last 2 weeks, in addition to stopping Kamara, those would be my two keys for this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Chargers pass rush has kind of, you know, gone in the opposite direction in the last couple of weeks. Obviously, the health factor of Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa is huge there. Gus Bradley did say on Friday that he's ready to, quote, unleash Kenneth Murray. I would love if that meant as a pass rusher, because we saw him have some success at Oklahoma with that. But obviously, you know, that isn't really Gus Bradley's MO. Tyler, what are your two keys to the game? Excuse me.
Yeah, so the first one for me is winning the penalty battle. So the Saints have actually been called for 28 penalties. The Chargers have been called for 27. The difference is the Saints have been called, or they've given up in terms of penalty yards, 398 yards, whereas the Chargers just 195. In particular, they've been called for 11 defensive pass interferences, which is four more than the next worst team. So I do think that the Chargers have some speed to make, to force those defensive pass interferences, you know, hopefully get some chunk splash plays out of that or get a defensive pass interference, who knows. But I believe all three, oh no, Jenkins isn't playing. But all three of their starting DBs, if Jenkins were playing, they each had, I think, three defensive pass interferences each. So this is a team that you could kind of force to make stupid errors. And they did that against the Raiders. Like, they were grabbing and holding. They looked terrible against the Raiders. And I think the Chargers could make, you know, force those errors as well. Gabe Neighbors needs to not go out there and screw up two punt returns. I mean, some of the watching him commit those penalties, it wasn't even like, you know, kind of a ticky-tack, illegal block in the back, whatever. Like, he tried to, like, maul people over and then pick. Like, he was fighting with the other person for no reason. It's freaking punting. Chill. Like, just block, and that's it. I don't know what he was thinking. So hopefully Neighbors doesn't come out and make those stupid mistakes. The other one for me, I'm going to change it up. I was going to think of something else. But I'm just going to say play with energy, because this team is going to be shorthanded. The Saints are the better. Right now, they're the healthier team. They're probably the better team. And certainly maybe at this point, the more complete team. And I just think the Chargers have to win somehow. And I think they got to win with energy. You know, the same way they came out and kind of just walloped the Packers last year. We didn't expect that at all. But they came out and they were just firing on all cylinders. Of course, it helps that Joey Bosa and Ingram are both healthy and they were crushing the, you know, the tackles of the Packers. But, you know, energy can go a long way. And if they can find someone to spark, you know, I mean, yeah, Herbert's a spark, but they need something else on defense, something to spark. And, you know, yeah, as Alex referenced, you know, you got to get pressure on Breeze and you got to stop Kamara. And if that's Kenneth Murray this game, and if the rookie balls out and he is really unleashed, as we hope he will be by Gus Bradley, maybe he's the energy this team needs, because this team needs to come out. If they come out flat, it's over. They're just going to get, you know, frustrated. It is going to be a very frustrating game. Breeze, I know he can't chuck the ball very far, but he's not going to, I don't think he's going to turn over many, you know, throw too many interceptions. He's not going to get sacked a bunch. Kamara's going to leak out of the backfield, get a tons of first downs. You know, so they have to keep that energy going. They can't get discouraged by these plays. And yeah, energy and winning the penalty battle. That's mine.
I think those are two really good calls. And, you know, the penalties, you know, outside of the Gabe Neighbors thing, the offensive line, which I'm going to talk about now, the penalties from the offensive line have always come in the red zone. I don't know what it is, but, you know, these penalties for the Chargers offensive linemen have been drive killers, and that really hurt them against the Panthers, specifically, you know, the illegal hands to the face from Roy and illegal hands to the face from Feeney, you know, a holding from Sam Tevy against the Chiefs. So I don't care if you have a penalty and you know, you're at midfield, but like, please don't have penalties in the red zone. That is the one place that you absolutely cannot afford to have them. So the offensive line, I thought they played a little bit better last week. They still obviously struggled against the Buccaneers blitz calls on occasion. Justin Herbert was still pressured way too much, but he was pressured 21 times against the Panthers. And I think 11 against the Buccaneers. So, you know, everyone kind of laughed at Anthony Lynn saying that he had a plan. It didn't work to perfection, but it was better. And that needs to continue this week. The Saints blitz a lot as well. They blitz more on third down than the Buccaneers do on second and first down. So that's a little different. But, you know, the Saints also have Cameron Jordan, who is historically one of the more underrated defensive ends in this league. He's been highly productive his entire career, and he's going up against Trey Pipkins. So, you know, Trey Pipkins, I was a big believer in him in the offseason. We've seen every kind of version of Trey Pipkins, right? He played great against the Chiefs. He played awful against the Panthers, and then he played okay against the Buccaneers. I'm hoping we can get a good version, like a little bit better than last week. Maybe I would take in between great and good. I would take average, honestly. But the offensive line definitely needs to continue to improve. It seems like they're kind of hoping for some continuity at right guard can help that cause with Ryan Groy instead of Tyree St. Louis. Either way, the offensive line needs to be better. Weirdly, the left side has been pretty good for the Chargers so far with Sam Tevy and Forrest Lamp. Dan Feeney should have a much better game because the Saints don't have a nose tackle like Vita Vea. But overall, the offensive line needs to play better. And the running backs need to play better. You know, Austin Eckler's not on this team anymore. And he makes up for so many discrepancies of the offensive line because of his vision, because of how slippery he is. And we didn't see that from Joshua Kelly or Justin Jackson last week. And, you know, I highlighted this on Twitter. There were several opportunities that they had to break big runs, and they just, it's this weird thing that Joshua Kelly does sometimes where he just kind of sticks his head down and just buries into defenders, and he'll gain 2 yards. Like, he doesn't lose yards, which I guess is positive considering Melvin Gordon would lose 2 yards on similar plays. But, you know, Joshua Kelly, like, in week one, we didn't see those kind of things, and his vision was so clear, and he was so explosive as a runner and as a receiver. If Joshua Kelly, you know, isn't averaging 4 or 5 yards a carry, I think this is going to be a long day for the Chargers because, you know, I would like to think the Chargers can rely on big plays, but, you know, we know in the NFL that's not going to be a weekly occurrence where you have 2 60-yard passes, especially now that the Saints have seen that film. They know what Tyron Johnson and Jalen Guyton can do. Almost exclusively run deep 9 routes. So, you know, I expect the Saints to make some adjustments. And if the Chargers want to win, I think Joshua Kelly and Justin Jackson have to, I'm not going to say that's a run for over 100 yards combined, but they have to make it a threat. And, you know, you can't afford to give the Saints the opportunity to basically just drop 8 into coverage and say, okay, Justin Jackson, Joshua Kelly beat us, because they're just, they're not in enough of a groove right now. And so those two have to step up, and the offensive line has to step up if the Chargers are going to win.
Those are great calls. I mean, really good calls. Eckler in particular is going to be, it's going to be so hard to miss him, or it's not going to be hard to miss him. It's going to be tough without him. And yeah. I believe among the three of us, he was the number one graded starter that we had. And, you know, not Donald Parham getting a 10 doesn't count. So Eckler, I mean, just, You really saw it last week. I know that, you know, Jackson and Kelly didn't exactly get a ton of carries and touches to be able to, you know, work and build up some sort of rhythm. But, you know, Eckler is a guy who makes this offensive line look so much better. He, especially, you know, get the Chiefs and the Panthers, getting yards kind of out of nowhere and overachieving quite a bit. And I know Pro Football Focus is, but, you know, again, they grade him very well. Because, and I actually believe it, because he's overachieving, breaking tackles, making plays. He's reliable. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough one. Hopefully they can make up for it. But I think we all saw the same thing against the Buccaneers. Joshua Kelly just takes the ball and then misses the hole or just drives right into the center. And it's like, what are you doing? How did you – what was the play supposed – I mean, we all – I'm glad you actually found this, Steven, because, you know, we all kind of expected and kind of hated that, you know, Steichen came out and they ran the ball 2 times and then tried to throw it or whatever happened. But if you execute, it's not just a run up the middle 2 times in a row. There's actually something else there that he missed. So that was a really good call by you. And then Justin Jackson, I expect more from him, but I have no idea what kind of, you know, physical state he's in right now. He looked slow. He looked kind of confused. Did. It was very, very strange. So I just don't know how much you can fix that in a week. So we'll see.
It did seem like he was almost hesitant to hit the holes too, which maybe kind of highlights, you know, maybe he wasn't super healthy. But, you know, if Justin Jackson and Joshua Kelly are able to kind of hit a couple of those holes that I mentioned, and the Chargers were able to get, you know, maybe like 35 or 40 yards rushing instead of like 18, I think that's a big difference in the game. Alex, did you have any other thoughts about maybe some keys to the game or something that you're trying to keep an eye on?
Tyler kind of mentioned Donald Parham there. You know, we gave him our 10 grades, but from the guiltiest charge scale. But, you know, I think Parham is a big piece in just getting other players involved, right? You might not have Mike Williams tomorrow. You're not going to have Austin Eckler. So it's going to be about getting those guys that the Saints don't know involved, like Donald Parham, like maybe they aren't super keen on Tyron Johnson yet because it's just been 1 week, right? So just getting all of those types of guys, maybe Justin Jackson breaking a couple plays, Herbert maybe using his legs somehow, you know, stuff like that, where I think is like, all right, you know, get some of these guys and get some of the stuff that the Saints don't know about the Chargers yet. Because I think you're going to need to be creative, you know, to beat the Saints, since we've kind of established that the Saints should win this game and are the better team. So I think you're going to have to show them something that they haven't seen.
Yeah, and, you know, I was really excited to see that Donald Parham touchdown. I was a little annoyed that he didn't play the rest of the game. So I would love to see him and Hunter Henry be involved really heavily in this game. I think, you know, defensively, the Saints are pretty weak up the middle. You know, Malcolm Jenkins, he's a very versatile safety, but he's really struggling in covering tight ends right now. And Darren Waller obviously exposed that about him. But, you know, the Saints have given up a lot of yards and touchdowns to tight ends. So I don't know if we're going to see a ton of explosive plays deep this game. I think it's going to be more of like a slice and dice in the intermediate range, which is going to beat the Saints, because I think Hunter Henry, Donald Parham, Keenan Allen over the middle, I think those three are really going to be what kind of determines if the Chargers offense is moving the ball. And obviously, like we mentioned, all the other keys. So, Tyler, any other thoughts before we wrap up today?
That's it for me.
Cool. Well, sounds good. Like I said, hopefully you guys enjoyed this extra episode. You know, it was a lot of fun kind of planning this together, and thankfully it worked out. Hopefully the Chargers win. Hopefully Joey Bosa plays, and I'm just really excited to see Justin Herbert again. It is, you know, if they lose, it's going to suck. But at the end of the day, right now, it's all about Justin Herbert and his development. And hopefully the NFL can get a handle on COVID as well and kind of pull their heads out of their asses.
Exactly.
All right, guys. Well, that'll do it for today's episode. Make sure, as always, to follow us on social media at GEC Podcast 17, at Tyler Schoon, at Alex Landsdorf, and at Stephen I. Haglund. That'll do it. We'll see you tomorrow.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.